Welcome to the First Church of England podcast for 2015. Today we'll be hearing about the work of the Archbishop's task groups, which are looking at a programme of reform and renewal. Later in the podcast, we'll hear more about the Church of England's views in the assisted suicide debate, and we'll be hearing from a Wiltshire woman who was recognised in the Queen's New Year's Honours for her work with her local church. All this week, details have been released about the work of various task groups set up by the archbishops last year to look at ways of reforming the Church of England. The groups have been asked to look at specific aspects of the institutional life of the Church of England, where the archbishops say there appeared to be scope for significant change. They talk of the burden of church buildings, which weighs heavily, and how reorganisation at parish level is complicated by current procedures. I spoke to John Spence, who's the chair of one of the task groups, Resourcing the Future. He explained more about the work of the groups.
We've got several task groups, and it's important to recognise that we are responding. We didn't sit down here and say we must have five task groups. We sat down, examined the evidence, and for each reason, a different task group came into being. We need to help the bishops of today and the leaders of tomorrow to ensure that they can supplement their wonderful churchmanship and spirituality with the other skills that they need, and to make sure that people coming into senior roles in the future are fully equipped. We needed to recognise that the formulae by which funds are distributed at the moment don't bring with them an accountability, and certainly don't bring a focus on the numerical and spiritual growth, the discipleship growth to which we all aspire. Then we noticed that, or what the evidence told us, that the number of priests will decline rapidly with retirement. We need to refresh and rejuvenate the priestly force. We need to think about how we develop the numbers of lay leaders and ministers that the diocese told us that they want. And that created a third task force, while a fourth was about the whole programme of simplification, where we know that so much people want to can be hidebound by historic practices and procedures which were put in place for different reasons and different times. And if you're going to do all of those things, you need to make sure that your small but perfectly formed engine room at the centre is operating to the right agenda, is doing the right things, is equipped to do the pieces that others can't, because we'll always apply the principle of subsidiarity. So you had five task groups come into play, not because somebody sat down and said, let's have five, but because five different and quite specific needs were identified. We've had two bishops already tell us that we have less than a decade to address the issues, or else we will see the church wiped out of large parts of their bits of rural England. That's the sort of challenge that faces us. We have to grasp certain nettles, and we have to grasp them together. But do you know, much more positively, what this is about is sowing the seed of the Church of Christ of the future, building on the great things that are happening now. So yes, the consequences of inaction or failure would be horrible. What we're trying to do is change the balance now so that those flames of growth which are already burning can become much more apparent, much more widespread, and that they can be nurtured, so that this church rises again in glory.
The Bishop of Sheffield, Stephen Croft, has been responsible for the Resourcing Ministerial Education Task Group and also led on the Discipleship Report. He explains what recommendations they've come up with.
I hope the Synod will respond by having a really good, rigorous conversation about discipleship, which is something the Synod has been asking for some time, and I hope that that conversation will continue in dioceses and parishes in the coming years. The recommendations in the paper say that we need to do some more work and thinking in this area, which is under-resourced at the present time, and ask the House of Bishops to commission some new resources. It also has 10 marks for dioceses on developing discipleship, which I hope, again, people will dialogue with and take seriously and put into practice within their own diocese. But the most important thing is that more and more we become, as the Church of England, a community of missionary disciples committed to loving God, loving one another, and loving God's world.
The Bishop of Sheffield, Stephen Croft. And the Bishop of Willesden, Pete Broadbent, has overseen the Simplification Task Group. He explains more about the work they've done.
What we found was there are some common themes. And so what we're bringing to Synod is a report with a lot of different possibilities for legislative change, most of which takes quite a long time. So we've prioritised some. And the priorities are making common tenure for clergy such that folk can do short-term appointments, can do turnaround jobs. People who are in curacies can extend their curacies if they need to without staying the same job for life. A whole pile of things around that. Secondly, we want to make more use of bishops' mission orders. And we found that most dioceses are frightened to use them because they're much too complicated. It's the usual principle of saying, well, let's build in lots of terms about why it might not quite work. So conditions are attached, consultation is to the nth degree. We're simplifying all that. It's important because we aren't fleet of foot enough to be able to do mission. If you want to reorganise parishes, if you want to put new experiments in place, if you want to put missional communities on the ground, you can't do it without a lot of faffing around and quite a long time in the process. Now, it's important to be considered. It's important to have a legal framework. And the Church of England's got that. But what we haven't got is the ability to say, we'd like to do this for the next 3 months, we'll have achieved it. That the Church of England has not worked like that in the past. And we're saying it's perfectly possible, with all the constraints and safeguards you need in terms of proper consultation, to achieve change for mission, for new experiments in doing things, for people doing different sorts of jobs, in ways that will actually benefit the mission of the Church of England and enable us to make a difference in evangelisation and in relating to our society.
And you can find all the papers and video interviews with the task group chairman by going to the Church of England website. Proposed legislation on assisted suicide is debated in the House of Lords again this week, and while it's highly unlikely to complete all its stages before the end of this Parliament, the conversations will continue about Lord Falconer's bill. The Church of England's National Advisor on Medical Ethics, the Reverend Dr. Brendan McCarthy, has been explaining to me the Church of England's position in the debate.
Contrary to some people's opinion, the Church of England position is absolutely clear and absolutely consistent, and that is that the current law, along with the Director of Public Prosecution's guidelines for the application of the law, has just about got it right with regard to assisted suicide. So the Church of England's position is that the current law ought not to be changed. In other words, assisted suicide ought to remain a crime, but that law ought to be applied compassionately, and that's precisely what the DPP guidelines enable. If someone is acting purely out of compassionate motives for a loved one, perhaps under emotional duress, of course we wouldn't want to see someone like that prosecuted. If, on the other hand, someone was acting because of financial interest, or if someone in the medical profession was deciding to misuse their medical position, then, of course, those would be cases for prosecution.
Now, there have been a lot of people publicly who have come out in support of Lord Falconer's bill, which has meant that, obviously, this process has kept going and there have been amendments to the bill. Don't those amendments make it more acceptable?
Well, I don't think so. I think there are two points here. Firstly, you know, we've had a list of celebrities stating that they're in favour of the law being changed. And very often those are sound bites given by celebrity figures. I haven't seen many of them drill down into the detail of the bill. And it's actually the detail of the bill as well as the principle that creates lots and lots of problems. One major problem is that if the law is changed, vulnerable people lose virtually all protection. You just cannot put in enough protective safeguards to stop vulnerable people being abused, because we already know in England and Wales every year over 300,000 elderly people are abused by their relatives. So to suggest that a change in the law permitting assisted suicide would not put extra pressure on many of those vulnerable people would be naive. Now, what some of the amendments try to do is they try to put in some safeguards. What the amendments do, if someone votes in favour of them, I think they're saying this might make this a less bad bill, but it doesn't make it a good bill, and it doesn't change the principle of the bill, And the principle is, or one of the principles is, do we want to be a society that deals with its ill, its elderly, and its sick people, possibly by opening what could be floodgates to assisted suicide or eventually euthanasia? And I think the Church's answer is very clearly no. What we're talking about here is not, for example, my right to end my life. I don't have a right to do that, but the law does not prohibit me from ending my life. What Lord Faulkner and others want to do is to bring in a third party into that. So it's not about my right to die or my ability to die. It's about your right or your permission to be involved in me dying. So it's actually not about the ill person's rights. It's about the rights and the obligations and duties and permission given to a third party. And that very often has been overlooked in this debate. So what we're suggesting here, what Lord Faulkner is suggesting, is that for the first time since capital punishment was abolished, the state would allow somebody else actively to be involved in killing another person.
What would you say then to those people, to the campaigners for this bill, that they need to be thinking about, that you think that they might not have already considered?
Well, I would like to ask them two questions. The first one is to be rigorously honest with themselves and to answer the question, is this bill being pushed because they see it as an extension of personal individual autonomy? In other words, they're acting out of a philosophical and ethical dogma. And I think in many cases that is what's happening. And for them, it's not actually primarily about hard cases and individual people for whom we all feel compassion. The second thing I would like to ask them is that while I agree with them that in a small number of terrible cases, it's entirely understandable that someone might want to have their life ended. We understand that desire. Is the most compassionate way of responding to that, saying, yes, we not only understand your desire to have your life finished, but we agree with it and we'll participate in making that desire fulfilled. What we're saying is that a much more compassionate way of dealing with that is providing such a person with as much support and love and concern and help as we possibly can give, while at the same time protecting many, many, many more people who, if the law was changed, would be placed in an extremely vulnerable position. So, ultimately, a question I would also want to put is, if the law were changed, would more vulnerable people be put at increased risk? And I think the answer is absolutely yes.
And that was Brendan McCarthy, the Church of England's National Advisor on Medical Ethics. Finally this week, the work of many church members and workers was recognised in the Queen's New Year's Honours. Margaret Williams from Swindon in Wiltshire has been a lay minister at Christ Church for 40 years, and she was awarded an MBE for her work in the Diocese of Bristol and for services to the community. As she explains, she's seen a lot of changes in the Church of England during her time.
I've been 40 years as a lay minister, and that I was the first woman lay minister in this area 40 years ago. I was sort of the first piece, I feel, in the jigsaw puzzle years ago. And it took 20 years before a woman became ordained priest, and then another 20 years before one became a bishop. So I feel this is the last piece of the jigsaw. And so I'm pleased to have been a part of that jigsaw. And now there is equality in the Church of England for men and women. I think far more the church is at work in the community rather than the community coming to the church building. And I think that is a shift that is happening. And I think you see the church working out in the community far more than we did 40 years ago. The things that go on we didn't have lay chaplains, for instance, retail chaplains that go out and talk to people, and people are so welcoming for this sort of thing, the retail shops in Old Town, for instance, have a chaplain. But I thought this year we would do something different. We went round, we had a nativity trail, and I went to see lots of the retailers and asked them, would they be willing to display one nativity figure in their shop and children could go and look for it, you see. And the retailers were all so welcoming and said, oh, what a lovely idea. And the church, and it's amazing when you go and talk to them about that, they bring up all sorts of other things, you know, which they probably would never think of going to church to talk about. But the church going to them is different.
Margaret Williams, MBE, from Swindon in Wiltshire. That's it for this week's podcast. Next week, we'll be hearing from the Archbishop of York about his new book on rock or sand. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.